Go talk to the geniuses that are online.
Recorded during halftime of the Saints-Vikings Monday Night Football game, it's time to Belichick Your Premises. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and I would like to thank you for telling a friend about our rational football talk we have here. And when I say rational football talk, I think it's important that I'm being joined by my co-host on Welcome to the Midside, Daniel T. Richards.
Are you excited, goodness,
for the first week?
Yes. I couldn't even wait for you to finish that question. That's how excited I am about football. I felt like a heroin junkie who was on methadone for the whole offseason and now gets back on the actual heroin. So I am just so fucking pumped. I was literally shaking. No, I'm just kidding. I was very excited about
You were missing football more than I was. I will say that.
Yes, indeed. I don't know what happened. In the interim, we won the Super Bowl, and then you were like, "Ah, okay, football. All right, take it or leave it." And I'm like, "No, another Super Bowl."
Yeah. I think I was more reflective of the emotion of the Patriots team than you were.
Probably, yeah. You were very much like, "Yeah, well, you know, did that. Okay, moving on." And I'm like, "No, I have to have another one."
I think if anyone out there listened to the first episode of this show. You'll understand why it's really interesting that our sort of emotional dispositions have flipped for this season.
Indeed. I think it's, you know, partially because I'm relatively still new to football in my adult life. Like 2008 was the first year I started watching football, whereas you grew up with it. I didn't really grow up with it. I sort of, you know, sort of kept it at arm's length growing up, thinking it was this barbaric nonsense sport for idiots, basically. And,
you're an idiot.
Well, I know that now. I'm into it now. I'm trying to make up for lost time.
And you're trying to make up for it so much that's why you wanted to start this show, right? To talk about the other idiots who think it's just barbaric and treat it barbarically.
That's right. The two things we're going to do here when we talk about rational sports talk, I think it's important to define our terms here. What we mean is that there are two things when we talk about sports. And we got into this a little bit in the introductory episode, but for those of you who missed it, want to recap it, which is there's football as sport, meaning how the game actually is played, should be played, as performance art, etc. And then there's sort of football as narrative, as a story. And that works in a couple subparts. Then I start to sound like a fucking lawyer. But, like, so football is narrative. One, there's just the media narrative. What is the media trying to sell us about football, teams, heroes, villains, how are things edited, etc. And then there's football as narrative, but as, like, inspirational hero story. Like, how does it inspire me or you? Or how is it almost artistic in that sense?
Yeah, and for me, the interesting thing is how those two things you just said interact. How does the media narrative affect what's going on in the field? How does it affect the strategies? How does it affect the way we interact with it as inspirational art?
Yeah.
And for me, there's no better example than week one in the NFL, especially this year, right? Because the Patriots had the Thursday night game.
For the uninitiated, by the way, this is going to be a Patriots-heavy podcast. If the name of the show didn't give it away,
yeah,
we want to be
say.
Very clear up front that if you just have some unending, burning, fiery hatred of the Patriots at the core of your soul, one...
Then you're an idiot.
Bingo. Two, you're just not going to enjoy the show. You have to be at least open to hearing two Patriots fan talk about the Patriots, but I hope the goal is to speak objectively about the Patriots. So
here's the thing, like if you're a football fan and you don't want to hear about the Patriots, like you're in trouble, Right. It's the same thing. Like, if you're a college football fan and you don't want to hear about Alabama, like, good luck. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a movie fan and you don't want to hear about Marvel, good luck with that.
Yeah.
I wish you the best of luck.
Exactly. So week one, NFL, lots of Patriots talk. Why?
Oh, it's like, I don't even know what the media was saying after the game. Mm-hmm. All I know is like what my experiences were after the game.
Yeah.
So the Patriots obviously got clobbered, mainly in the fourth quarter of their game against the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yes.
Right? I mean, they put up 27 points, but gave up 42, I believe it was.
That's correct. The most points ever given up against a Belichick defense.
Yeah, but again, that's media narrative right there. Like, oh, I'm sorry. Previously, they gave up 41 points. We're going to fucking say, like, this is the worst thing ever based on 41 point, based on 1 point. Like, that's what the media does. That's how they spin these stories. Oh, it's 1 point more than they've ever given up before. Oh, this must be the worst Belichick defense ever. It's their worst performance ever. Like, you can't objectively measure it based upon 1 point like that. Like, that's a statistically irrelevant standard of deviation. Am I wrong?
No, you're definitely not wrong. The media narrative, so the media narrative before this game was one I didn't like at all. And I don't think one that's congruent with Patriots fandom in a certain sense, which is, the narrative was, no one can defeat the Patriots. Who could possibly, the Patriots team looks better than it did last year. You can't, they're going to go 16-0. Should we just give them the Super Bowl now? Now, obviously there's a bunch of tongue-in-cheek stuff there, but that was sort of the narrative. The pregame announcers were talking about, like, is it premature to say that the Patriots could have a perfect season? And so to give that a bit of a objective talk, like, even the best teams, even teams that look just fucking incredible, and I'm not talking just about Patriots, like any team that looks incredible, it is always premature to talk about a perfect season. Because it's insanely difficult to do. See Patriots of 2007. So.
That's how you can tell you're a new fan. It took you a minute to remember what year that was. The rest of us will never forget.
The Patriots of 2007, according to 538, were probably the best football team ever. So at least statistically.
Yeah, but that's part of the whole narrative that's going on right now. Like, part of the reason people are responding to this loss the way they are, and I do in a second want to get into how they're responding to it, is we seem to have forgotten how little the Patriots lost last year. Yeah. Like, I really think the team last year needs to be compared with the team before it. They literally only lost two games last year. One was everyone was hurt. We literally were playing with an injured third-string quarterback. And the second was that loss to the Seahawks where I know in the America's Game documentary, they had LeGarrette Blount saying it wasn't PI, that Gronk's legs got crossed together against the Seahawks, but I still think that was PI.
Okay, we're getting deep now, but
that's another discussion.
The point is, all I'm saying is statistically speaking, where you measure everything across all these teams a certain way evenly, whether or not you call that objective or whether you call it relative, either way, 538 has that 2007 Patriots team is one of the best teams in the history of football, and they still couldn't go completely undefeated. Like, it's really hard, is the point. So, what I want to say about that was, the narrative pregame, no one can beat the Patriots, no one can beat the Patriots, but it sets up what the media is hoping for. And I don't say this as, like, I think there's some nefarious plan. I just think it's journalism. This is how journalism works now, which is, we hope we can beat the hell out of this narrative come Thursday after the game. That is, we are hoping to set this up as a narrative that we can just wring the hell out of it afterwards of, oh my God, what happened to the Patriots? Now that they've lost, is it over? Is the Brady era over? Is the Belichick era over? Is the That's what they wanted. I'm not saying they can will reality. I'm just saying that is literally what they wanted.
Right, and when I say there's a nefarious plan, I don't mean it's personal to the Patriots. That's just the way they are in general with these narratives.
Yes.
And what they're trying to do is get the reaction that they're getting out of people. I mean, I've had numerous times since that game, people ask me how I feel about the loss.
Really?
And, wow. Like, I literally, like, I have no emotional reaction to the loss. like I watched with my girlfriend, and you know, she's not a football fan. She's more of a Lakers fan for basketball. Like she's a huge, like her lock screen is Kobe Bryant, and she looks at my phone and it's a Patriots case on my phone. It's like, this is never going to work, but we're making it work. But I watched the game and we lost. And then like we went and got gelato after, and I'm like, see, aren't I like a rational fan? She's like, yeah, I'm really impressed with how well you're taking this loss. I'm like, it's fucking week one. It's week one. Like, it's week one and our defense just couldn't tackle. Like they couldn't do basic tackles. So am I really going to get upset? Like if the officials fuck us over, I'm going to get upset. But week one and the defense just is like, oh, you know, here, rookie running back, just run for 4 touchdowns. Like, I'm not going to get upset about that. But still, I'm at the gym and this girl who works there, who's a Cowboys fan, she's like 23 and, you know, doesn't even remember or know about any of the Super Bowl victories in the 90s. You know, I got my headphones on, I'm lifting, and she comes over to me and she taps me on the shoulder and I'm like, what? She's like, how does it feel? I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, it doesn't even register to me that she's talking about the game. She's like, you guys lost. How does it feel? And I'm just like, I don't know. Like, it's week one. Like, yeah, it sucks we lost, but, like, hopefully Belichick will get the team in line. And then I'm out on Friday night with my girlfriend, and one of her friends says to me, so you guys, like, lost, right? It's like, yes, we lost. And just the fact that these people think that, like, me acknowledging reality is going to somehow upset me.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, we lost. I can't admit that we lost the game that we actually lost and we played like shit and we got destroyed in the fourth quarter. Like, and then even at work, a guy comes in. He's like, so Brady's looking really old, huh? Those long throws, they didn't look good, huh? It's just like, whatever. Like, here's the thing. In the last two games, we went 500, and the last one was the Super Bowl. Do you think any of us are really upset that we lost? I mean, and that's part.
Yeah,
that's part of the reason we lost.
Yeah,
right. And that's how nobody's talking about the story. And this is what I'm talking about where narrative overlaps. So everyone really wanted the Patriots to lose, including the Chiefs, which is why the Chiefs played out of their fucking minds. I mean, Alex Smith had a career game.
Yeah,
and then you're the Patriots. You've just overcome 2 years of Brady being persecuted, and you've done this amazing comeback. You're getting your fifth rings, or it's the fifth banner raising. It's not a surprise to me that the team was not mentally up for the game, because yeah, I wasn't mentally up for the game. I had the same sort of feeling. It was like it was done. And now maybe it can be reset because it's only week one. But the fact that people are overplaying this, it's just recency bias.
Oh, totally.
In sports coverage. And in the NFL especially, where there's only 16 games, I know there's only 16 games, so each game is important, but to put so much emphasis on a loss in week one or a win in week one is insane to me.
Yeah, so let's get – that's a good overview of the narrative and why we should be wary of narrative, especially in week one. So let's talk a little bit about football, qua football, to use the qua term, making sure we keep our Objectivist fans interested. So,
fuck them. I don't care.
I do. I love you. Here's what I want to say. I don't want to talk about this purely as this was the Patriots game to lose, because I also don't like that kind of talk in football. It's sort of, and I think you actually were the one to say this to me at one point, where I was like, oh, the Patriots let them do this or let them do that. And I think it was you who said, you realize that the other team has free will, right? Like, they choose to do things.
Was this at a previous season I said this?
Yeah, a couple years ago. And it's like, that was what should have been a retarded point that was actually very well taken, which is, there are two teams with strategies. It's not, it shouldn't be, even as much as I love the Patriots, I shouldn't think about it as, if the Patriots execute their strategy, they will per se win. That is not how this works. There are two teams with two different coaches and a slew of different players, all of whom have a completely different objective in mind, who are going to try to out-chess each other, essentially, to use a different quasi-sports metaphor. And I want to give credit where credit is due. The Patriots, of course, I don't think looked all that great as a football team, and the Chiefs didn't look like the best football team I'd ever seen, but I thought their strategy was good. I thought Alex Smith's execution was good. And Andy Reid say what you will about Andy Reid, looking at his statistics, he is probably the second best coach in the NFL right now. He has a tremendous record. It doesn't show up in the playoffs, unfortunately, for Andy Reid, but overall, he finds a way to win games against tough opponents, including against the Patriots, historically speaking.
Well, this is the second time he's done this against the Patriots in 3 years.
Yeah, so credit where credit is due. The other team had a good plan. It was executed fucking flawlessly, and Alex Smith had a better day than I've ever seen Alex Smith have, and the rookie running back, although making a mistake on this very first play, came back, had some mental toughness, and ran all over the Patriots. So credit where that's due as football performance.
Right, but let's keep in mind here, this is week one.
Yes.
So
yes,
the
yes,
Patriots
yes.
aren't going to go 0-16, and the Chiefs aren't going to win the Super Bowl based on these performances.
Based
either of those
on these
things could happen.
That's right.
Right, yes. Either of those things could happen. I don't think either are likely, but they could happen. Likewise, there are other teams that did really well that I don't want to just jump on the bandwagon
correct.
Right now. I mean, the Los Angeles Rams
yeah.
looked lights out. If I had to pick a best team in the league right now based on the games, not based on my knowledge of overall football, I would say the Rams looked the best on Sunday. I mean, they've always had a great defense. The defense had two pick sixes. Now, granted, they were against Scott Tolzien. But Jared Goff finally looked like a good quarterback. He was in the pocket. He was making good throws. And it was complemented by Todd Gurley finally running like a professional.
Yes.
Overall, it's hard to find a hole in that team. And I want to say as well, I forgot to add, Sammy Watkins is now on that team. So they've got their trifecta there, the old school Cowboys trifecta. They've got that, and they have a strong defense. If I had to pick, I would say, did the Rams finally gel? But again, it's week one against a Colts team who their star quarterback is out.
Right, and who may be out for a while now from the latest news. Poor Andrew Luck. Whatever happened to that guy? Wasn't he supposed to be the second coming of Peyton Manning or something?
Yeah, I mean, that's the narrative thing as well is, unfortunately, with this 24/7 coverage, everyone's trying to get out ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
And they can't let things develop. They have to set up. And it's like you were saying, with the setup for the Patriots, it was either we're going to continue building them as the force we want to see lose, or we're going to try and bury them after they do lose. That happened at week one, unfortunately, for them, so they're going to have to rewrite their stories. But with Luck, they were trying to build that story of him as the greatest ever.
Yeah.
Or one of the greatest ever. And just his body hasn't held up.
Right. Which is too bad for as nice a guy as he is. But nice guys don't always finish first in the NFL. So continuing on that, so I agree with you on the Rams. The Rams, I watched the whole Rams game. The Rams looked great. Week one, you know, it's hard to say that that's continued. And the Rams have shown in the past they can decimate the Seahawks and then lose to the Browns. So, historically speaking.
And they've always, let's be clear, they've had a good defense for the past, what, 5 years?
Yes, quite a good defense.
Yeah.
And that's without Aaron Donald in the first game, by the way. Think about that for a moment. No Aaron Donald in that game. Still an incredible defensive performance. And I think Sean McVay is overall an upgrade on the coaching there. I think Fisher, while it's probably a solid quality coach, didn't have anything. He didn't have that je ne sais quoi. Yeah. What I mean to say is he was pretty stale in the way he was doing things. So shaking it up, that new 31-year-old coach. Yes, you heard that right. He's 31 years old. Justin, is that insane?
Yeah, I mean, I think that after games, him and Goff just play Call of Duty together.
Maybe. I just that
they don't talk game plans. Actually, their entire game plan is just written in memes at the Rams for the Rams.
I mean,
now,
obviously, there's a point at which all head coaches in the NFL will be likely younger than I am. But I thought that'd be like 20 fucking years from now.
I know.
Anyway. So they looked good. But another person who looked good, another team that looked pretty darn good, even though they lost, is actually the Browns. I don't know if you watched any of that game. It was Browns-Steelers, so a division game there. And for a while, it looked like the Browns might pull it off. And the game ended up being 21-18 Steelers. But the difference in the game was actually a muffed punt by the Browns that the Steelers returned for a touchdown. Take that away. Well, I mean, take that away, it's a completely different game, but if you take that away, obviously the score is the Browns win that one, maybe, or it's more likely. The Steelers' offense looked anemic. Ben Roethlisberger didn't look like he knew the playbook. And Le'Veon Bell looked like he had no idea what a running back position was. The saving grace in that game for them, in that performance, was Antonio Brown, who is just a beast. Man, incredible.
Yeah, I saw a statistic today. Was it like he was responsible for like 60-something percent of the Steelers' offense?
Yeah.
On Sunday?
It was something like in the first half, they had racked up a total of 67 yards or something like that. Like, it was an anemic performance at best. And DeShone Kizer, the new Browns quarterback, rookie quarterback, looked pretty good. He was making good decisions. He was pretty accurate. You know, a couple times he got sacked, but he didn't, you know, he basically let himself be sacked instead of letting the ball be ripped from his hands. Looked good. But again, this is week one. And I'm not sure that history shows us that by week 16, we're going to be saying, boy, those Browns still look quite good, and boy, those Steelers are anemic, because the Steelers are always a team to be reckoned with.
Right, and we're not going to be saying, man, are the Rams going to be able to complete a 19-0 season?
Right, exactly.
I mean, we've seen teams go through October undefeated, and everyone was hyping them up. Was it the Eagles last year? Yeah, it was the Eagles,
oh,
remember?
Oh, they lost something like 8 in a row? Yeah.
Yeah, they were undefeated, and everyone was talking about how they finally had their new quarterback and everything, and they were going to be the best team. And then they just, like you said, they just shit the bed like that.
Yeah.
And that's because football is about learning the playbook and being able to execute it together. And offense is about being of one mind with the quarterback.
Yes.
I mean, one of the reasons the Edelman loss is such a big deal for the Patriots up front is because him and Brady are like the same person, because Edelman tries to be Brady.
Yeah.
So Edelman knows what Brady's thinking, and that makes it easier for Brady to always get him the ball. And now you have a bunch of wide receivers who aren't really on the same page as Brady. I mean, we just traded for Dorsett, so he was on the field, and he doesn't even know the playbook yet. So you can't say what's happening with these teams yet, because you don't know how they're going to gel together. You don't know how the strategy is going to develop. And also, there's the learning curve for the coaches as well, knowing how your personnel works together and knowing the best way to execute with that personnel you have based upon their weaknesses and their strengths. And this is the stuff that the media never talks about.
Right. And it's the stuff that, growing up, why I thought this was sort of a barbaric game is I never got any of that from anywhere. Not even my family. Like, it was all just pure, like, who can run into each other the hardest, they're going to win. And that was just completely unappealing to me as a small, growing professor personality type. Anyone who's read the Art of Seduction will understand the reference. It seemed too based in the physicality for me, and there wasn't enough intellectual. When in fact, as I grew up and met Justin and watched Patriots play, I learned that it's this glorious combination of the physical and the intellectual, which is what makes football such a phenomenal sport. When I think
right, mind and
essential
body.
Sport. Yes.
Anyone who knows me knows that I am all about mind and body.
Yes.
You have to have both. And you have to have the strategy. You have to have the game plan, the Belichickian game plan. But it doesn't matter how good the game plan is if you don't execute it. And again, it doesn't matter how well you execute if the game plan sucks.
Yep. Mind and body. That's what makes it so interesting to me. So, I don't know, any other performances stand out to you? I don't know how much you got to watch on Sunday.
I mean, Adrian Peterson right now, he just had another 2-yard gain. He's run 5 times for 16 yards.
Do you think I don't want to speculate, but it seems like he's getting a little old for this.
I mean, that would be the speculation, is if that's the case or not. I'm just thinking about the narrative, how everyone would say it. Oh, the Patriots are wounded, and then they're going to go into New Orleans against a high-powered New Orleans offense that has now scored 6 points so far.
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, there were some defensive performances on Sunday that I didn't expect, like the Jaguars' defensive performance. Who are they playing? The Texans? And dominated them. There were 10 sacks in that game. 10 sacks in that game. It was crazy. So
basically what you're saying is all the good teams are the teams that have sucked for years. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
But wouldn't that fit with what we were just saying about mind and body? Isn't it going to be the teams that are younger and more physical that are going to be able to be better in the beginning because their emotions are running high?
Yeah, absolutely. Emotions running high. They have something to prove. They're going to have all this energy. And this is one of the things that I've really appreciated about Belichick coach teams and some other coach teams as well. I don't want to say Belichick's a monopoly on this, but thinking about the dichotomous nature of the NFL. Yes, I just said dichotomous on a football podcast.
You said dichotomous nature of the NFL. That's the episode title.
what I mean by that is that the NFL is both a long-term and a short-term sport. Like life. You have to take each game as its own entity and be able to game plan for that specific team, those specific players, etc. But you also have to be able to figure out how you get better over the season, how you conserve your, you know, quote unquote energy for the season, how you deal with injuries for the season, how you deal with constant change, because that's the only thing that is consistent in the NFL is that your players are going to change, the injuries are going to change, their capabilities are going to change. So how do you deal with that holistically long-term and on a week-by-week basis? And I think some teams are better on the week-by-week and shit on the long-term. So they're willing to do things that getting them the advantage in the moment, but overall they can't put together a whole season because of that.
Well, I would say that right now is the identity of the Steelers. That was that's the team that most exemplifies that to me.
That was definitely, that is 100% what it ended up in its totality to be last year, which is on a week-by-week basis, the Steelers could be the most deadly offense in the NFL, but by the time they got to the end, they had no more depth. They were just out of players, and they just couldn't deal with the changing nature of the game, and once Le'Veon Bell went out in the AFC Championship game, they were done. They had no chance because they didn't have the depth to deal with it. I think the Patriots
You know what you're also sounding like?
What?
I mean, this is the Super Bowl in a nutshell, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. On a micro, the ultimate micro level, but on an individual basis, this was the Super Bowl. Absolutely. The Falcons went out there and gave it 1,000% for three quarters and then couldn't sustain that for the fourth quarter and thus allowed the Patriots to come back and win because the Patriots
were
more
evenly
measured.
And that was part of the strategy there. Keep them on the field.
Yeah.
Use their youth and exuberance against them because they had the Patriots had the experience of being there multiple times. So they knew what to expect, whereas this young Falcons team didn't.
Yeah.
And Belichick game planned to use that against them.
And I haven't finished it yet, although I'm close, but the documentary Do Your Job Part 2 about the Patriots season, there's a whole storyline in there about this hill that he makes them run, which I did not know about before this documentary, basically running these sprints up a hill. And like the line,
about it because when we walk by, if you're ever in Gillette Stadium and you walk by practice and you try and like stop, people like yell at you, like you can't do that. Belichick will flip out. It's like he's got eyes everywhere. Like I tried to do that once. I was in the stadium. I tried to like watch the Patriots practice for like 30 seconds. People were like, "No, that's not allowed."
That's awesome. I had no idea. So I didn't know they ran these sprints up the hill. But the line he used was something like, you know, we do these sprints and make them do them and then do plays precisely because if you put in the work now, you can bank that energy for later. And I basically thought that was a really great way to think about it, which is like you're doing the work now and it sucks. But what you're actually doing is banking energy for when you need it later, which is a tremendous way to think about it. Tremendous way to think about life in general.
I mean, not to call you out right now, but maybe it's because you never played sports. Because when I wrestled in high school, it used to be the same thing. When we would go into training like that, when we would do mat drill, and it's going on and on, and you're like, I don't want to fucking do this anymore. Like, I'm tired. We just start saying, this is for the third period. This is for overtime. Well, just think about when you're in overtime. You're going to have more energy than your opponent. Third period, overtime.
Yeah, there's no equivalent of that for a quiz bowl team.
No.
Yeah. There's no banking it for later. I mean, it doesn't matter how many books you read on European history. There's no banking it for later. That's just not how that works.
Yeah.
So maybe it is. I don't know. But it was a great sentiment. And it's one thing I think the Patriots do really well is on a micro level, they play their game throughout the whole game. They stick to their strategy. They don't panic. And sometimes their strategy doesn't work out and they lose. But they know that in the long run, sticking to the strategy, sticking to their game plan, sticking to what they can afford to give out in energy makes more sense than throwing it all out the window and just being frantic flailers.
Yeah, except when you can't tackle, then like
when you can't
tackle, it matters.
You're going to lose every game.
Yeah. So. What is that guy's name? The guy we got from the Seattle Marsh? Like,
sure.
I was just fucking watching him try to tackle and then like watch the guy run away and he's looking at him sadly. It was like sad Hulk walking away music while he's watching the running back run for a touchdown.
Yeah, and one of the things I'll say about the Brady passes to address that specifically is, yeah, he was inaccurate on a few passes, but a lot of them were ones I've seen in previous seasons where Brady throws the ball and it's to like an open space in the middle of the field, and you're like, well, what the fuck happened? But if you read about that, like, it's almost certainly that it's a broken route, or like the receiver ran the wrong route, because the Patriots playbook is very complex, and it's early in the season, a lot of new players don't really know, and don't really know what Brady's thinking like Edelman does, so... Like, usually, and that's not just Brady. Like, there are other quarterbacks, you see them throw the ball, and it's just, like, into a middle-of-the-field nothingness. And it's because they were expecting the receiver to go the other direction, and they didn't.
Right, so. And that's the point about execution early in the season, where you can't judge a lot based upon the results, because people aren't executing on the high level they will at the end of the season when they get a feel for it or where they have a better understanding. I mean, I'm watching this game right now, and Minnesota looks like they're destroying the Saints. But they're only up 19-6. Like, you would think with the way they're controlling this ball and moving it, they would have more points, but then they stall out in the red zone.
Yeah.
So it's just like that, those little bits that can go either way, right? When you're a coach, you have to look at it and go, okay, we need to execute in the red zone better, and that has to be a changing priority.
Yeah. So what are some emerging narratives that folks should be on the lookout for? Do you have any good examples of either narratives that are coming out for this week or for the season that you think people should be wary of or be at least be, you know, at least critically thinking about?
I would just say the Jared Goff hype train is going to get going after this week. I mean, we'll see what happens in week two, but people are going to start saying that he's really, really good. And it's hard to know yet.
Yeah. I mean, I think the one,
the Raiders,
yeah,
the Raiders, people are going to start hyping again.
Yeah. For the Raiders beating the Titans 26-16, the amount of Raiders talk you're going to hear is going to be incredible. Don't get me wrong, Derek Carr did look good in that game. Marshawn Lynch looked fine, but he didn't look beast modey. I mean, not like we used to see him. So, but there's going to be a ton of Raiders talk.
Well, especially, here's the thing, Derek Carr is at that precipice of his career. And what I mean by it is it could go either way.
Yeah.
Is he's looking good, but he has yet to prove himself in the playoffs. And we saw this years ago with Tony Romo. This was before you started watching, Daniel. But, I mean, you've heard the jokes about Tony Romo's faulty snap on the field goal in the playoffs for the Cowboys.
Yeah.
That was really the turning point of his career.
Yeah.
Because before that, he looked like gangbusters. Nobody could beat him. And then the pressure was on in the playoffs, and he wasn't able to win. Derek Carr hasn't had those watershed moments as if he is the next big thing. He hasn't proven that he is yet. You know, Roethlisberger proved it when he was young.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Even Rodgers won one Super Bowl to prove that he can do it, which is why, you know, the hype is a little much for him sometimes, but he's at least proven he can win. But Derek Carr, people are hyping like he's already proven himself, and
right.
He hasn't. I mean, look at Sam Bradford with the Vikings last year and this game, too. Is there really any difference between the way Sam Bradford leads the Vikings versus Carr leads the Raiders? Controversial take, but...
Not a hot take, a cold one. Ice cold. Ice cold take here. Yeah. No, it's a good point. He has not proven himself, and that's one thing. Whenever you hear a narrative, that's actually a really good key point for people when they're listening to sports narratives. Think to yourself, what is this person actually accomplished in reality to deserve this narrative? If it's nothing, then you know it's a false narrative, or it's at least a narrative that the media has an agenda for. And again, we don't mean it's nefarious or it's whatever. It's mostly just a journalistic agenda, get clicks, get views, but it is an agenda nonetheless. So what has the person actually done in reality? What does it correspond to? So far for Derek Carr, the answer is nothing. Nothing.
Well, I mean, some regular season success. I don't want to say nothing. Like, I mean, that's like saying anything Peyton Manning did in the regular season doesn't count. No, he's had regular season success a little bit
so
far.
Not for the hype that he has.
Oh, I agree with that 100%.
That's what I mean. Not congruent with the hype that he has.
Let me ask you this.
But
to clarify for people,
sure.
What would be the kind of success? Like, how do you judge that?
Like, you should have a good regular season is one thing that can start to get you acclaim. One is making your team to the playoffs. But like, some are things like, you know, coming back from deep losses, leading your team to a victory, having these big game changing moments, having them consistently, like, or not giving up. So like one of the things that Brett Favre, you know, that didn't get enough shit for, I think, in his career is like moments where he personally fucked over his team, like not having those moments. And I think Derek Carr on all those points is sort of fair to middling at the moment. Like he's good, but he hasn't done anything outstanding yet. He has a chance,
right.
Especially if he doesn't get hurt this year. He has a chance. He has an opportunity to show the world that he can do those things, but he hasn't done them yet.
Right, and I know it's controversial and people don't like to say it, but getting injured in crunch time is one of those things. And we don't like to say that because we often like to say the person's body gave up on them and it let them down. Like we say that with Andrew Luck and we say that with other players. But hasn't Tom Brady shown there's a way you can take care of yourself and a way you can play to avoid injuries? Now, I'm not saying bad injuries can't happen. Brady blew his knee out and missed an entire season. But if in the short term you do the right things, over the long term you will protect yourself. And maybe this injury that Derek Carr had was a freak thing. You know, he did break his leg. Like, that's a freak thing. But injuries in big moments do say something. And injuries that you can't be there for the whole season do say something about a player.
It is controversial, but I think there is at least something to be said or a conversation to be had around the fact that not being injured is part of the talent of playing a sport. And part of that talent is knowing your own body, knowing how to take care of your body, knowing what to do. So to continue to use Tom Brady as the golden god example, are you tired of this yet, audience?
Or we could just use the anti-example of Danny Amendola. Like I said, what was the gif I sent you during the game? Oh, yeah, it was a cartoon dog playing dead. I was like, every time Danny Amendola gets hit, this is what I see.
Yes.
And it's just this dog that he like looks up for a second and then he plays dead.
Or
it's literally
other,
every time Amendola gets hit.
Or the other Danny, Danny Woodhead, who is injured every time the fucking wind blows in his direction. But to use Brady as the Golden God example here, like he learned after a few seasons, like taking sacks, hard sacks is a bad idea. So what does Tom Brady do when someone is barreling down on him? He either throws the ball at the closest receiver's foot, which is a great move, a very Brady move, or he just falls down. And it looks fucking ridiculous on television. My wife laughs every single time he does it. But it's the correct thing to do. It is better for you just to fall down and take the sack as opposed to being hit hard in the ribs or in the knee or in the head or in some way that could potentially hurt you. So I don't know. I like that kind of thing versus, you know, the Roethlisberger version, which is, well, one, he's very good at getting away from sacks, but two, just like allowing himself to be plowed into for a sack instead.
Yeah. But to be fair, that dude like survived a motorcycle crash without getting hurt.
He's
like, I think he can take hits.
I'll give him that. But I think it's opening yourself up.
So you can
up.
Either be born genetically gifted so you can take any hit ever, survive a motorcycle crash, or you can train your body. Like,
that's right. That's right. So we don't speculate here. So we're not going to – I don't think it's appropriate for anyone to say who's going to win the next game. But I will say that historically speaking, Belichick doesn't lose two in a row. I don't know if that's a fluke or if it's psychological or what it is. So – that makes me hopeful. But also, I just think that the Patriots are good game planners. And I think they'll come up with a good strategy for New Orleans. So
we'll see. It looks like New Orleans is about to score here and make this a 19-13 game. So
riveting.
Maybe the Saints are a little bit better than it initially looked. Who knows? Who else are you going to be looking at? What other games? Is there anything that you're going to want to watch next week?
I'm going to watch them all. God damn it. I bought fucking DirecTV's thing where you can watch the games. I'm going to watch football. That's what I'm going to do on Sundays. I'm going to do other work, but I'm going to watch football.
I'm in that early stages of a relationship, and I only see her on weekends. So it's like, fortunately, she goes to the gym on Sunday mornings when the Patriots tend to play. So like, I can get out of that way, but I can't sit there and watch football all weekend. Like, yeah. There'll be times later in the relationship where, like, she's like, I'm going to go shopping or something and I can watch football. But right now, like, I don't really need to watch the LA Rams do pick sixes on Scott Tolzien. It'll be okay.
Yeah. My wife works on Sunday mornings anyway, so I sort of have it off and I just get to sit back and relax and watch football and do some work. So that's one. Before we leave, I want to give one more narrative, but it's more of a, like a social justice-y narrative that's developing.
Is it fucking Browns? Are you going to talk about the Browns in that stupid, awful video?
No, I'm not.
Put a video on their big screen before the game where they just all sat there and they talked about, we're a nation divided right now, but we don't have to be divided as long as we love each other. Love will win the day.
That's right.
Fuck, that doesn't... I'm glad you're virtue signaling as a professional football team now.
Yes,
fucking
everyone...
simply saying love is going to do things. Okay, Cleveland Browns, go out there and why don't you use the Care Bear stare every week and see if that wins you football games.
Yeah, at this point, what do they have to lose? No, not that, although that's a fucking stupid story. No, the narrative is a continuation of the fucking Kaepernick narrative that will never end. Someone else on my Facebook feed pointed out that if Colin Kaepernick didn't exist, ESPN would literally have nothing to talk about. Because ESPN is the 24-hour Kaepernick network at the moment. But what I'm starting to see develop is a narrative where, and I saw this on three separate sports blogs, same picture of Tolzien laying on the ground in pain, and the headline for all three of them was something to the effect of, like, with all these shitty quarterbacks in the NFL, Kaepernick deserves a chance. And the narrative there is bothersome for a couple reasons. One, he walked away from a contract. Remember, he wasn't fired. He walked away from a fucking contract. And two, he had an opportunity to sign with the Ravens and he didn't take it. So this whole Kaepernick deserves a chance thing is a fucking bullshit narrative that is not only social justice and virtue signaling, it's flat wrong. It is literally a lie. Do not buy into this crap. The NFL is one of the most meritocratic organizations in the entire world. If Kaepernick was fucking Tom Brady, but if he was like Tom Brady is what I mean. Let's not picture that. He would have a gig in a heartbeat with millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. It would be almost impossible to keep him away. He's terrible. Thus, he's offered some things, and if he doesn't want them, that's all he's going to get. Fuck you, Colin Kaepernick. The end.
And if you want to hear takes like that on social justice and other lies in our society and hearing us expose them and witnessing this farce that Daniel just pointed out, you can check out our main show, Welcome to the Midside. You can find it on themidside.com/podcast. Or if you found this show through iTunes, you've already found it. So why don't you just click on one of those other episodes right now? You can also check us out on all the social media platforms, The Midside. You're going to be interacting with me there. I curate all the Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, Facebook, all that. And where can we find you, Daniel?
You can follow me on the Twitter at Daniel T. Richards, because I hate pseudonyms.
Yeah, fuck pseudonyms. And for now, we're on to the New Orleans Saints.
My face, your face, instant face, go talk to whoever you want that does that stuff.